Summertime and the living ain't easy. That's not the way that the Gershwin brothers told us it was going to be. George and Ira in Summertime. Summertime and the living is easy. Fish are jumping and the cotton is high. Well, the fish are jumping. It's to get out of the toxic water. And the cotton is high, and so is the price of ethanol and gas and wheat and rice and almost everything that we have to buy. I hate to channel Jimmy Carter, but there seems to be some sense of malaise in the country, some understandable sense of malaise in that we are involved in a war that is not going well and another war that's going worse. We are involved in a great deal of, I think it's fair to call it, dread, that people are feeling insecure about almost every part of our lives and our world, which is really interesting considering that, in a sense, everybody in here won the lottery in terms of our world and our lives, but how much we have probably is related to how much we fear the losing of it. There's another line that just occurred to me from Porgy and Bess, and that is, I've got no locks on my door. If you have nothing that's worth stealing, you don't need the locks on your door. And so we in America, with all of the blessings, the plenitude, we are living with a sense of dread and fear, to a sense that's really disproportionate to our threat and the threat to our lives and to our lifestyle. But there are some true elements to be very afraid of and very concerned about. One, of course, is that we look around and I referenced the toxic water. Water is a diminishing resource. Clean water is the largest medical health problem in the entire world, and it's becoming a problem here. So you can't assume that the water is good. You can't assume that the air is good. When your air comes in chunky style, you know that there's been too much stuff going into the atmosphere. And for those of you who will watch the Summer Olympics in Peking, you will understand what chunky air is and how it comes in three or four different consistencies. It's a scary world. The old joke used to be about American apple pie, and apple pie was bad for you. Now take a simple bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. Incidentally, I'm only allowed to reference the bacon here. I can't actually do the demonstration and show it to you. But a BLT is a major decision, financially and medically. The bread has gotten more expensive because of the wheat. The bacon, because of both the price of pork bellies and of the health issues and concerns. And the lettuce, because the lettuce has got some issues with it too, and with pollution. And tomatoes. Who knew that tomatoes could be dangerous and could carry salmonella, referencing back to the jumping fish. The salmon are in danger and the salmonella is doing fine. And salmonella is not the Italian word for a little salmon. We've got major issues going on in our lives and in our society. People, regular Americans who look just like America, are afraid for their jobs. They're afraid for their homes. They're afraid that the number one investment that most Americans have in their homes is a depreciating asset. And you know that recent buyers are what they call upside down in their homes, where they owe more than the house is worth off the market. So there are emotional and financial and physical and fiscal concerns that many Americans have. Our banks seem to be failing with some distressing frequency. This makes loans more difficult. People have had their lines of credit cut off, and the anxiety just builds and builds, and that's without even throwing in 9/11 and people waiting for that other shoe to drop and all of the fears that go on because of our increased sense of vulnerability and how the world has shrunk. And whether it is a terrorist getting on a plane from some formerly far-flung corner of the world, or if it's a virus or Ebola getting on a plane and landing here, there is a fierce unrest stirring at the American soul. Add into this that it's a political season, and both sides are very interested in making everyone afraid of what the consequences would be if the other candidate is elected. And we have a country that isn't dancing so much as twitching. And that's usually not a good thing. Fear is usually not a good way of being motivated to engage and to change and to heal a broken world. Positive visions and a sense of purpose are much stronger and, in a sense, surer. Because most of us, when we are afraid, have all of the fight and flight hormones inside of us, and they don't do us well in terms of decision making. As we enter a political season, the amount of intellectual cant, of distortions, of obfuscation is just stunning. We have a tradition of using language that does not clarify but muddies, so that the Save Our Forests initiative is to cut down trees, because of course a forest can't burn if it's not there. It doesn't take a Zen master to figure that out. You cut down all the trees, the forests are absolutely safe from forest fires. The Clean Skies initiative was to relax pollution standards. Peacekeepers are soldiers. Genocide is repackaged as cleansing, and human beings dying are only collateral damage. As the poet said, it's eye for you, an euphemism, because we don't talk straight. And into this, at this moment, where there is maximum distortion and fear-mongering and spinning faster than a whirling dervish, we have to lose not only Tim Russert, but George Carlin. George Carlin, who is probably one of the best people, not simply in comedy, but in the public arena, at piercing through the hypocrisy, the misuse of language, the double speak and don't think at all approach that many politicians and leaders, both religious and secular, use. To go through this season without both Russert and Carlin just seems to be cosmically and karmically just unfair, because it's going to mean that we have to think for ourselves and have other and not have other people burst those bubbles of pomposity and distortion. Kind of interesting when you look at them. At the surface, they don't seem to have much in common, except that there were two Irish guys from New York. One couldn't have been more civil and polite. His Roman Catholicism was central to his life, and that's Tim Russert. Carlin, on the other hand, on the civility part, not so much. The seven words are still the seven words, and it's a shame that those, in some ways, will be his epitaph, because he was much more than that one routine. He regularly looked at the world in that way that fools do, that kind of I'm going to use two words and Dennis will tell me which one is the right one, this kind of myopic and astigmatic way of looking at the world and just seeing it strangely in a way that, like impressionistic art, revealed a deeper truth than just a simple description would. I love his, my favorite of his was really the about people driving. Anybody who drives faster than I do is a maniac! Anyone who drives slower is an idiot. I'm the only one who's perfect. And people use this model unconsciously about all kinds of human behavior. People do it about their sexuality or about other people's sexuality. I'm normal. You're weird. And people do it about politics. I'm sorry, that's too radical. That's too conservative. I'm the only one that's got the balance right. And we don't understand that relativity, that seemingly simple little routine illuminates for us. The other outstanding thing about both Carlin and Russert was how central religion was to them. Russert, in following, in practicing, in being directly nourished by his Roman Catholic faith, if you've read his books, it's clear how central it is to his identity. And Carlin, seemingly exactly the opposite, reveals another kind of truth in his rebellion, which was the Roman Catholic Church was completely central to his life because it was about rebellion from that institution. And I submit to you that religion, like love, the opposite of faith is not disbelief or atheism. The opposite of faith is indifference. So I've just put an awful lot of people in this room into a position of maybe thinking a little bit about where our beliefs and rebellions are and how much of each of us is defined and understood, both by what we accept and by what we don't accept. It really was, Helene and I watched Carlin, the rebroadcast of its Bad For You show on Friday night. And it was interesting to see how much of it was his rebellion against religion in all its form. Helene and I had an interesting, I think, discussion about it. I found it interesting. She kept participating. And normally when she doesn't find it interesting, her eyes glaze over and she starts wandering out. It was about just that concept. She believes herself to be a devout atheist and a religious person. It's not a contradiction. It is how so many of us are. We don't accept the old pictures, the old ideas. As Rabbi Ken said at a workshop that we conducted together, I probably don't believe in the same God you don't believe in. It's a good line. It's a good rabbi. Give him the laugh. It's not my own line. He deserves the laugh on this because it's true. The centrality of rebellion as opposed to looking at the source of our beliefs and looking at the source of our inspirations and looking at how we organize our lives around certain values is extraordinarily important. It's hard work. Sometimes it's difficult and threatening work to look inside at what it is that we believe. I think that Carlin helped a lot in terms of giving people tools to clarify what it is that's central to us. The great Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams said that everybody believes in some form of God. If you understand God not as an old white man with a beard sitting on a throne wearing a toga, that's just kind of an aging frat guy, but if you understand God as the source of meaning in somebody's life, he said, give me a weekend with somebody and I'll tell you what the source of meaning is in their life. What makes them angry? What makes them happy? What makes them passionate? What makes the veins on their neck stand out? Are they motivated by power, by lust, by greed, by generosity, by giving, by appreciation? Everybody has things that motivate us, that touch us, that nourish us, and also that empty us and drain us. And maybe the religious job as individuals as opposed to communities is to do the hard work of looking at ourselves, looking in the spiritual mirror and asking what's important. What beneath all of the subterfuges and camouflage of words is really, truly important to us and informs us of how to be in the world and how to be better in the world. Russert took all the chaos of the world and tried to put it in order with neat questions that would punctuate a thought and puncture an illusion. Carlin created chaos out of phony order, both really valuable parts of the creative process. One of the great lines that Baba Ram Das used is when people ask, how can it be that Hindus believe in a goddess of destruction? And it should be clear. In order to build, in order to mold, in order to create art, there has to be that raw material. That's the chaos that we form into order, if only for a little while. A house of cards that we build that must not be epoxied into a house, but it has to fall in the winds of change so that we are constantly engaged and re-engaged in the creative process. Neither order nor chaos can rule our lives. They are part of the yin and yang of the creativity inside each of us. I'm going to end with an entirely self-serving note, but I hope it's inspirational in its self-servingness. And that is, there was an article, I guess there is an article, in today's New York Times, about, and this is not a political endorsement, because if you'll read my article on the board out there, you'll see it wasn't an endorsement, that some defenders of Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, are changing their middle name to Hussein as a show of defiance against those who would use it as an unwell-veiled ethnic slur. Has nothing to do with endorsing a candidacy any more than the Danes who put on Muggendavid's Jewish stars were converting to Judaism. It was a statement of solidarity against hatred. So it's in the New York Times today. The first mention of this was in February in the Fullerton Observer in an article that I wrote. So the self-serving part of it is I believe that I started this. And I said, and I have reason to believe I started it, because it was on the net, on the blog for the Daily News. It was also in the Fullerton Observer. It was also in my focus group list that has people high up in Chicago in the Obama campaign. And it was circulated. That's the self-serving part. The unself-serving part is this. Little things can make a difference in a big world. Small stones thrown in ponds send out ripples beyond what we can know. So we have to do, or we have to try to do, the things that are congruent with our values, not with the calculation, will it work? Not with the calculation, is this going to take off and become a viral practice in the good sense? Not with the sense, I'll only do it if enough people will notice. Life is an incomplete information problem in terms of informing us on what to do and how to solve problems. It's also incomplete in terms of what it is that we do and choose and act and how it touches other people. One of the great things about what I do in the world for me is that people will come up to me sometimes 20 years later and say, you said something that really stuck in my head and it made a difference. Or I felt really lousy and you put an arm around me at a time when I needed that. And I get the feedback about the difference that small things can do when we act out of a sense of genuineness and not simply focused on the result and the triumph, simply trying to do the right things. I think Mother Teresa said it best, and that is, the object in life is not to do great things, but to do small things with great love. And in order to do that, we have to know where we're coming from, what our gifts are, and then choose to give them and let them go. And you can simply wonder how they will ripple through the universe and feel good about your stone in that pond made a ripple that represented something of you. We all have remarkable power and ability to make a difference in individual lives, and we can never know how far the difference from one life to another, to another, to another goes. What we choose, what we do, all of it is very important. In this season, when everyone is going to be trying to mislead and to give us a sense of fear, some serenity, some moments of quiet to look at ourselves and our engagement with the world can make all of the difference. See through the language to the values. See through the distractions and through the noise to the quiet places inside of us that have an intuition of what is for me right, what is for me the way to be engaged in this beautiful and dangerous and unsettled and unfinished world that our hands are given to do some, not all, but some of the work.